welcome back to the Six of Cups. This is a pleasurable round table that is based in the theory that if you can get a few like-minded people who share similar virtues and values together and discuss topics that are of evergreen perennial relevance in a manner that is both laid back and fun and easy and open, but also engaging and stylish, as well as, I dare say, intellectual or philosophical. What I'm trying to say is that we take topics that matter, that are useful, and deliver them in a multivalent, from different perspectives, point of view, with an overall similar cohesive manner. And like I said, similar-minded doesn't necessarily mean the same conclusion. You know, you can have a group of people that are after the same thing, and some of them aren't necessarily ready for certain levels of things either. So, you know, I hope on this show that we deliver enough substance from the substrate to the firmament, so to speak, so as it were. I always try to keep in mind that I am very brave and that it's not always the case that one is surrounded by those who could have inoculated them against fear. So you have to remember that if you're going to be serving, you have to be able to keep your message open for as many people as possible. And I think that's what we do with this show here. And I think it's really useful and great. Don't forget, this is the part of the show where those who have donated between 200 and above, and between is the firmament and above, you will get their notes and names read and get all those points added to the value for value role-playing game. Don't forget that you can, of course, attribute points towards shows. So you say this donation is during this time period. Sure, it might be read on the 13th or 14th or whatever episode. But you can always say that you want those points. I want this $333.33 donation to go towards the, a lot of people like the Alan Greenfield episode. You can get it to go towards that. So there's also that option. This is a living and breathing system, so to speak. It's Gaia, not Mechanica. That being said, I think it's time to go on to the show. Welcome back to the Six of Cups. This is a very fun round table. It's based on the pleasure principle in a sense, but there's also lots of rationality. You can't just go hog wild ape shit, can you? We'll see. I think that this is a modicum of reason that encompasses a deeply pleasurable upward spiral conversation. Tonight we have two lovely ladies with us, and this is a conversation that's basically around liberty and our ability to choose an upward path, if you will, to create a world where we actually can, quote-unquote, role-play real freedom into reality. That's the working aegis under which we work. And this evening on the Six of Cups, this is episode 11. Agnieszka is with us. Agnieszka is a versatile... we can vault. How about we get some better reading glasses? Is as versatile as she is inquisitive. I'm just kidding, guys. I was blinking my third eye for a second. That's what it was. Interested in a great variety of topics and ventures, Agnieszka is always looking deeper, clarifying, and exploring herself and the world around her. She is a master psychomatic therapy practitioner, a life coach, and an entrepreneur. Hello, Agnieszka.
Hello, how are you?
I think I'm wonderful, and I think you are too.
Indeed.
And we also have with us Samantha. Samantha is Sam also. She's 28 years old and goes by a pseudonym, Willow Grimm. Personally, one of my favorite names to say. It's actually very aesthetically pleasurable to roll around in the mind's tongue. And by the way, I'm adding that. That's not part of her bio. For work purposes, I have been drawn to healing. I'm speaking in the Willow Sam voice now. I've been possessed by her already. I have been drawn to healing practices since early childhood due to an experience with trauma, resulting in an autoimmune disease called narcolepsy. I specialize in traumatic experience counseling and spiritual healing due to these experiences, which has paved the foundation for my spiritual consultation business. Sam, a wordsmith as well as a healer as well as a wise woman. Hello.
Hi, Nathan Lee. How are you tonight?
I am bubbly and brookish and wunderbar. And this is a great place to start off because we have different names, and Willow Grimm being a pseudonym, and Agnieszka, I guess you guys didn't know, is actually David Bowie. So now the secret's out. I'm sorry. Sorry. On this level of creating ourselves in this like alternate kind of character persona, can we start off this conversation a little bit with your recent experiences with this game that you've been getting into and that I'm also deeply vested in? And Agnieszka is going to be able to spin this off with us like a dice or something, roll this off with us. Although God does not play dice, what do you think about Dungeons & Dragons?
I've actually come to love it. And this is coming from a person who wholeheartedly used to make fun of it and anyone who played it. But my husband's dog had passed away, and I had a friend who had been asking me to play for months. I made a character but never really got into it, and I was like, well, I don't have anything to do now, so good distraction. And it has become the foundation for every week, my enjoyable, pleasurable time, so to say.
Well, that's nice. It sounds like it's kind of like there was, again, since you work with trauma and healing, it seems like this is a good quick highlight of something that one can do when life kind of goes sideways sometimes and you find that there's a hole or some kind of like space where something used to be. I think the power of the imaginal and the imagination is what we're actually talking about that you've been able to draw on here, which is why it's been helpful. Is that a quick helpful interlude?
Yes, absolutely.
Agnieszka, do you have any experience with role-playing games or maybe acting or kind of like creating characters and bringing things into life through that way of the imaginal into real-world praxis?
Yeah, I've played D&D quite a bit in my younger years. And of course, also some acting and other public events where I was on stage. But I think that D&D specifically gives us an opportunity to try on different archetypes, like Jungian archetypes, right? So psychologically, it could be very healing as you're, you know, embodying this kind of person or that kind of person. You're creating different characters. And I kind of do that in my real life. Like, for example, if I have to do some accounting or numbers, I kind of imagine someone who's really good at it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be like her right now. I'm going to pretend to be her, right? And in a way that helps, because then, you know, if I'm uncomfortable with math, then my friend isn't. So I'm going to pretend I'm Jennifer. Okay, Jennifer can do this, right? Or whoever.
I think it's so wonderful. Can I just like, I'm going to draw this, like, this is just coming to my head right now. But like you see people who are like of one persuasion or of this kind of political ilk or this kind of faith or this, that, the other thing. When you realize that like, if you can try this on and see the world through another person's eyes, that's very similar. I'm going right for the jugular apparently here, but that's very similar to what we're talking about with. Now, let's draw back from that point just to say what you're talking about is almost to me like a folk understanding of the planetary, what people would call the archetypal powers. You are drawing on the powers of, I would say, Mercury, the ability to be analytical and calculating and to do numerological higher order abstract thinking, which is totally Mercury. So you're like, okay, some people will wear a lot of orange and do this, that, the other thing and something this many times and at this hour of the day. And I think that it's very powerful what you're talking about, because it's almost like anything from Hindu to Chinese to Hoodoo to Japanese Shinto, not Shinto, excuse me, certain Japanese traditions where you get into the possession of the archetype where that allows you to accurately for that moment get your task done. But what you're showing is important because these roles are only for a short amount of time. We don't become consumed by the character. I'm going to go to Sam for a quick one. And Sam, if you don't mind doing us a favor, just talk a little slowly. There's a little bit of clipping when you're in it. So just maybe if you could help that way. But what do you think about the importance of being able to embody that role, but then to not let it consume whatever you're maybe we'll just call self for now? What do you think about that?
Well, Actually, I think it's one of the most powerful methods you can use. My personal experience, coming from experiences of trauma, one of the first parts of the brain that shuts down is your creative centers. So you can't imagine a world that is different. You're stuck here and you have to deal with it. Being able to see and identify different parts of people just that I was around, or characters, character slots, like different races and D&D and, you know, all these other things. It kind of helped me try on who I wanted to be at that time. And yeah, it would, one of the biggest parts of counseling is allowing yourself to be in a moment and be present without it overwhelming you. So the option of being able to slip out of that character is incredibly important. It's just the same as if you have anxiety, it's very important that you go to an event in your own car so that you can leave when you want to be.
Absolutely. That's very, I mean, that goes up the level from like primal body care to like emotional body care to like several different levels, like that aspect which you were ending on. But to bring it back around to trying on those archetypes, it's like the same thing. Like those archetypes are like you're saying with the car. You brought your own car. You can leave whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you get possessed that you're no longer in this in the driver's seat, so to speak. And that's why they call it the passenger, of course.
Yeah.
And there's a great Deftones song with Maynard James Keenan singing on it called Passenger.
I thought you were talking about Dexter.
Well, that was actually when I saw Dexter, you know, his quote unquote dark passenger, which is, you know, we're going to go to Agnieszka. I'll just say, though, my shadow self, I've been getting more and more close, and I've been like setting my white wolf inside upon him. My white wolf's fur is stained red with dark blood. I've been like taming, and it's like so subtle what people call that like darker impulse or that like downward spiral impulse, like selfish ego thinking and such. So Agnieszka, on that kind of, as we ebb into the spiritual aspect of this, what do you think about that, you know, concept of driving your own consciousness? And also, you know, we can change our consciousness, cannabis, some people use a downward spiral agent of alcohol if they consume too much. It can be an upward spiral if you consume it respectfully. But yeah, what do you think about this concept, Agnieszka?
I think that it's always a challenge working with your own shadow, right? But also, as soon as you said that, I was like, well, you're in Boston. Of course, you have to struggle with your own shadow. On the West Coast, it's so much easier. The air is lighter. The very air is lighter. And actually, I do find it, like, now that I live on the island, the whole atmosphere is not so weighing down. I don't know if that sounds woo, but I don't know.
You're listening to a show named after tarot cards.
We enjoy woo stuff.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, when in psychedelic Rome. So, yeah, please continue.
The egregor on the East Coast is very, very dense and very, very heavy. And apparently that has to do with New York and Philadelphia and Montreal, even a long history of torture or whatever. And that whole pharaohs of Boston, I'm not sure what that's all about, but that can't be a positive thing either. No, Brahmins of Boston.
Take us on a discour. We have the time to talk about this. Agnieszka, what is this pharaohs of Boston?
It was Brahmins of Boston, sorry.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, Husley. What is this Brahmins of Boston? Tell us about this. Because I know we have Shambhala Publishing in Boston, which I'm just in Harvard and such. And, you know, they're cool. But, yeah, let's hear about this.
You know, I'm not really an expert. And so if I get this wrong, don't anybody, like, beat me up or anything. But, verbally. I was reading about some rich people in Boston calling themselves Brahmins because they thought they were the leaders or the upper class. And this was something happening in Boston. And it's your town. I think that would be something fun to research.
Well, I mean, I believe that there's something connected to the Theosophical Society with that, but I'm not quite sure. And I'm not going to say that I know. That sounds left, like, vaguely rememberable. But, I mean, obviously, I'm saying I don't remember enough about it to speak coherently, nor would I want to waste anyone's time with something I know nothing about, because I can learn about it and be useful. Here's the thing. This sounds like you're talking about you know, this elite class, and we can get into that kind of stuff down the line, because I think it's going to come back around to our ability to role play whatever we need to see the society look like, so that it's not so stilted, and at the same time not be pie in the sky, and at the same time be able to try on the role of the people who know we're acting like adults. We're acting in what we think is the compassionate, patient, generous, good manner, and, or you could say, upward spiral building of society, so that it's something that's, I mean, freedom maximizing. But now I don't want to, like, you know, tell the whole story here. So, yeah. What,
when it comes to personalities and all that, that's wonderful. And it's wonderful to try on all these different emotions and reactions. Like, how would I react to this if I was this person and that person or this type of person? But when it comes to creating your own reality and actually creating your future, you have to remember about taking the first step, because no amount of imagination and being sure that, you know, I can handle myself in the situation and even putting a lot of effort into it, nothing is going to happen unless you take the first step and actually, you know, even if it's in the wrong direction, even if it's completely out of left field, you've still taken the step, and the universe recognizes that.
Well, to the degree, I would say, though, if you're going backwards, usually, like, downward spirally, we're talking about, like, you can tell there's some signs that are going on.
It doesn't feel good, right? If you're going backwards, it won't feel good. So if it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, I think that's important, too. So let's, Sam, what do you think about the idea? What kind of, like, characteristics are, what kind of characters do you want to see? Like, remember that not everyone's the same, and we all have our, but let's say, like, we have a society that's a little less brainwashed and a little more natural. What kind of qualities are we seeing in the general, you know, just from any economic, remember, there's nice people who are rich, there's shitty people who are poor, and this, that, the other thing. So, I mean, just what are the general character qualities that we want to cultivate here? What do you see in this citizen, so-called?
So I'm not really sure what words best to use. Compassion is the first thing that comes to mind, but a lot of people I've found don't understand what compassion is, because I had this conversation with a coworker one time, and she said that one of our values should be tolerance, but she said there are some things, some topics that are just, they're not tolerable, they're not okay, they're not moral, and you cannot tolerate them in a healthy society. And I agreed with that, so I suggested compassion, because coming from seeing a bunch of people that I care about come from really traumatic, bad experiences, the only way to help them heal is to help them understand that it wasn't necessarily their fault, that there are things that happen to the people who hurt them. And you can't even begin to see the things that, you can't begin to have any understanding of what your abuser has gone through unless you have compassion.
One of my favorite, to you, I want to validate what you're saying. One of my favorite, because I agree with you 1,000%. Let me say it the right way. I agree with you 1,111%. One of my favorite people is Frater Xavier, who runs Mind and Magic. And he has this absolutely riveting, I guess I'm going to call it a class, a course, a lesson, so a piece of knowledge, a piece of art knowledge. It's wisdom in artful form. And he has this clip that he takes of Matt Damon from Good Will Hunting in Boston, of course, with Robin Williams, a synchro nugget. And I love him. I honestly, he was such a big deal to me when I was a kid.
Me too.
And yeah, he has that part where he breaks down crying and he says, it's not your fault. And Matt Damon, you know, it's that part, you know, like, you don't want to let it in. And he's like, it's not your fault. And he's like, fuck you, man. You know, it's like, no, it's not your fault. So I think that's very important, and people should check that out with Frater Xavier. I'll try to find that for the show notes, because, you know, I do show notes. But anyways, yeah, I should do show notes, kind of-ish, maybe. My Piscean rising is just, now it's just like, whatever, dude. Maybe I'll do it. All right, so Agnieszka, take us home. Or, actually, take us to where there's no place like home. Take us to the next level here spiritually. what's going on when we're actually trying on these characters? I feel like you have a really firm way of that. You're going to be able to express this, especially, well, look at your background. So what do you think about saying that it's like, what's going on? Maybe not just psychologically, right? But maybe if you could take us a little bit more ethereally, or maybe we could just put it more like, what is happening in our deeper hearts or whatever? Like, people need to hear this the way they need to hear it. What do you think is happening with this process? And especially, what does that mean for our ability to choose?
I think that we're all born with the same possibilities. Like, maybe we have preferences. Maybe I prefer painting and another person prefers music. But I think that the propensity for thinking and whatever is pretty much equal in people. And it, you know, through a variety of factors, you know, nurture and nature, and probably a lot of it having to do with schooling, people kind of lose that faith in themselves. I was speaking to somebody earlier today that said, an adult, that said he doesn't think he's good at anything. He's not especially talented at anything. Well, how can a human being, you know, born in this world, not be talented at anything? Everybody has talents, right? Probably more than one, probably 20, 40, 60. How many talents do you have? You have a million talents, right? So, but our whole society is centered around, you know, playing it small and squishing us into these little neurotic things that barely seem like human. And so I think it's important for us to try on different characters, because in that case, we can actually get out of that stress ball and be somebody else, right? And
it's like a Fight Club. It just instantly reminds me of Fight Club. You know what I mean?
That's Eric's favorite movie.
Props to Eric, by the way, since, I mean, for fellow people, one subsection of the population that listens to the show, God bless all of you, because you're all awesome. And I mean that, but now I'm sounding like I'm pandering to the audience. I just want to say that you don't know that all the people here, we're all from the autonomy course that tragedyandhope.com, longtime running author. I think he's more of a radio guy. I'm sure he's going to be an author one day. If he's not already, Richard Andrew Grove and his super better half, Lisa. They've been running tragedyandhope.com, and he has a course called Autonomy. So the three of us are all from Autonomy, and something important about just the concept of autonomy and what we're talking about today. I think there's something that we're trying to contribute at this moment in time. And that being said, maybe we could just take two quick brief minutes each or whatever we want, just for people listening to this show. What is autonomy, Sam? What is that?
Autonomy, the course, or what does autonomy mean to me?
Yes.
The course.
The course is, how do I describe the course? It's going to be a not adequate explanation, but it is a method for clarifying what you need to do in your life to get it together. That's the best way I can explain it.
Telegram stop, not use them. Stop. Like, that's a really good message. Agnieszka.
So one of the season 2 students texted me last night, and I'm just going to read what he said. He said, "I'm so impressed with this course. Richard has done such a spectacular job putting this together." And that's certainly true about the season 2, because season 1 was awesome, and our whole class is amazing, and we all graduated together, and we'll be tight for the rest of our lives.
But just to make sure that we're just getting this clear for the listener, the class is a course that is run on Discord primarily. We also use Zoom, and it's a lecture-based course that also has heavy reliance on the participant module. So we all are together on this conversation. For that very reason, we all got to know one another over a period of time. I mean, one of the most important things in life is sharing, is the human relation. Just for a quick, you know, the esoteric thing, like, God created the reality and has conscious beings that can do godly things on the reality so God can appreciate them. I mean, take that for what you will in whatever faith, you know, even if you're just like into the consciousness morphogenetic field. That's cool too, I guess. Whatever you need to do. But you know, I think that the fact that the three of us are here together having this conversation even shows the testament. Look, we had to plan. So one of the things is just, it starts off with autonomy, begins with the first course, bare bones planning. And without giving the whole thing away, it's life skills, but it's done in a way that is professional. And what's most important here, it has integrity. And what's most important, it's run or cultivated and created and navigated by a person who has been through history with an eye and a heart and courage to always living towards the highest freedom-based principles. I choose my friends and my teachers and my associates externally very carefully. And this course has been of huge help to me in getting even the show off the ground, for case in point. So Agnieszka, I hope you don't mind my interjecting just for that. But yeah, I thought that it was a bit helpful.
It's like a step-by-step blueprint for life. Once you have the blueprint, you can do anything you want. You can become, you know, an artist, or you can become a gravedigger. It doesn't matter what you want in life.
You can be an artistic gravedigger.
Those were the two opposites I thought of.
Like, really, where do I put that job application in?
Well, that's not one of those. No, as we learn autonomy, that's not a job we apply for. That's a job.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
As an autonomous person,
talking about Dexter.
Find a gravedigger.
Agnieszka, go ahead.
As an autonomous person, you'd probably start with buying a graveyard, and then you'd get the profits from the graves, and then you can be a gravedigger with like a side worth of business, a solid business plan.
I mean, I got to use that as an advertisement for this show, because like, I'm like, look, listen to this podcast and three step grave digging tour here. Come on. Yeah. How to be a grave digger.
No, but seriously, autonomy allows you to develop the skills with the classmates and with the interaction with the other students, really practice and develop the skills that you need for every single interaction, whether it's dating or buying something, selling something, creating a business, creating a service, you know, creating a TV show, whatever it is, it allows you to really organize your thoughts and come up strong so that your offer can be well thought out when it's.
That's excellent. And go ahead, Sam.
Oh, I was going to point out, I think it's really another essential part of it is it's a safe place to do it. I know everyone hates on the words, you know, oh, this is a safe space, but it truly is. It's safe to be wrong. It's safe to make mistakes because you're not going to be condemned for them, and you're also not going to be enabled. So it truly is, by all definitions of the word, safe, because you're not going to be hindered either way.
And I think that's an important thing that we talk about. Like when we talk about Dungeons and Dragons, and then there's true and good and evil and lawful and neutral and chaotic. And I think that there's something about how there can be a negative way of looking at safe and a positive way of looking at safe. And then there's a real way of looking at safe. And I think that the negative way is like, oh, you know, I need to be obsessed with my safety. You know, after 9/11, here's one for you. After 9/11, when everyone started saying, stay safe. And I have begun to flip the magic and say, staying safe is one thing. Have fun. Have a nice time. Have an enjoyable day. You know, start flipping the script a bit, because that's very important. And anyways, so it's a negative way to look at space. Safe, and like that gets all perverted and irregular and detached from anything useful. It becomes a hindrance. Or there's a positive way to look at safety, which is that, you know, hey, we can all come together. We can trust one another. We trust that we're not going to talk about private things or anything like that outside of the individual interactions. And that's trust, and that's friends, and that's family. That's literally how you form social bonds in the spheres of spirituality. Now to finish then there's the real. To quote Helen Keller, safety, there is no such thing as safety in nature. Safety is man-made. Let me actually not butcher her quote, because she damn it, she deserves the respect enough that it's on my website. So if you go to occultfan.com, I love that I can plug it for the fact that I want you to have a Helen Keller quote. I think that's beautiful. Some way that makes my heart sing. When you scroll down on the occultfan.com homepage, And if anyone's in this listening for the, this will be out after the Invisibles group starts, but that is where the donate button is. For in any case, you can go to there. But right down here, when you scroll down, life is either a daring adventure or nothing. Security is mostly a superstition. It does not exist in nature. Helen Keller said that. We have zero excuses. And if you want to try on a character to play, and this is like, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, and those who take this the perverted way suck, but those who want to try on a character to play for courage, you don't have to go to Richard the Lionheart. You don't have to go to someone like Thor. Just think about Helen Keller and think about the tenacity, the perspicacity, the aptitude, and the perseverance that she showed in her life's heroic and dominating triumph.
All right. Well, I hope you're enjoying the show so far. This is the Metro. This is the part where those who have donated between the $50 amount and the $100.99 amount get their names and notes read. By point of virtue, we are about a third of the way through the show, so I would hope that you guys are enjoying this so far, and I think you're going to get a lot more out of the remainder. Until the outro, here we go. Back to the show.
You're back.
I was actually just thinking about the biography that I had read about Helen Keller and all of the amazing accomplishments and just the trials that she had to go through. It truly is inspiring. It was one of my favorite ones as a kid.
I love that you've read that. I have not read the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin, but I feel like that if we were talking about like a great set of biography books, you know, the great biographies, those two would be on there.
To be honest, my favorite it was a biography because I believe Annie Oakley was dead by the time the book was written, but it was about Annie Oakley and how she was basically fed up with the fact that she didn't want to be cooking and cleaning. She didn't want kids. She wanted to go outside and trick shot her gun. And she literally made an entire business out of it and risked her life with experimental medical procedures to keep doing it. It was incredible.
That's makes me think of Marie Curie, you know, risking your life to further at least whatever your goal was individually.
Yeah.
By the way,
Agnieszka, who are some good female heroes that we could just throw out there right now? Because I think that's cool.
Maria Curie was Polish. I definitely a hero. She's pretty good.
Who was it? I'm sorry. Say it again, please.
Marie Curie. You just said Polish. Yeah.
My girlfriend's part Polish too. I don't know if it's okay to say that. I'll have to cut this in the editing or just be like, it's okay, baby. Anyway, so it's Polish Marie Curie. I didn't know this.
Right. She married a French guy.
Oh,
yeah.
So, I'm actually not entirely sure if this is true, but there have been recorded events of Harriet Tubman having sleeping spells where she would just all of a sudden collapse, and it's been suggested that she had narcolepsy and would have cataplectic episodes while she was ushering slaves through the tunnels, and sometimes they'd get like she'd have an attack and she'd fall asleep and they'd just sit with her for hours until she woke up. It was really cool.
Now we know that like she was one of the most, I mean, she was a very important figure in history. That was a very complex time. And I think that's worth getting into sometime because that, of course, all these stories get, you know, Jack Sparrowed or they should, or maybe they're just like banal bagels when they should be Jack Sparrows. You know what I mean? And we want to know the whole thing or whatever it is. Here's the thing though. That's also, I mean, I would be bereft of my comedian if I didn't point out the irony of the Underground Railroad and falling asleep and underground and the subconscious. I mean, it's kind of beautiful is what I'm trying to say. It's like a Grecian urn almost, the entire scenario, especially with the courage that urn contained.
Well, here's another layer of this. Agnieszka had helped me personally work through some things associated with my narcolepsy. And according to esoteric teachings, narcolepsy is the embodiment and manifestation of ultimate fear. And almost all of the symptoms individually lead back to a fear of this, a fear of that, a fear that something is going to happen. But it's always fear. And when you're asleep, you're most vulnerable. So it makes sense that a woman like that would probably be dealing with a lot of fear a lot of times.
I gotta say this, guys, because this is what brings us back around. This is very important because Gordon White writes in the Chaos Protocols that it has been observed, I believe, by Peter Carroll, that there's a war on dreaming. And what we need to do is win the war on dreaming. We are writing and creating this world. We are the dreamers. We are the dreamers of the dream. But which one dreamed the dream? So maybe we're all just a kitten asleep in front of a fireplace in some Victorian children's tale. Or perhaps in some other fashion, we are truly dreaming. But we are authoring this reality is the key thrust of the example. And I'm thinking, as we talk about trying on these new roles, as we talk about having the ability to step in and out of, in sound mind, in good character, and of good heart, I should add, that it seems like we're talking about one of the ways that we can bring more praxis-based freedom, and dare I even say healthier culture and healthier bodies into this world. And this is just adult talk. It's not overly esoteric. It's not underly comprehensible. And it's definitely, certainly on the point usable. So I wonder what we can talk about as far as, and here I just want to clarify that a very good example of what we're talking about is that time when you're asleep or in the underworld, so to speak, when your subconscious is extremely disk writable, and you should always in your sleepy times, not only should you be taking a synchronicity journal and a dream journal, writing your dreams when you wake up, date that shit and everything, but you should also be saying very nice things to yourself when you're in that very vulnerable state. You are your best friend, right? So you say, I love you, Nathan Lee. I love you, Agnieszka. I love you, Sam. And like, you're going to kick ass today or whatever positive, like if you're not strictly asleep, like entering into the other universe, so to call it, like where other programming and other adventures are happening. And I mean that just like, I say that simply, but holy crap. But that's where the war is, especially. We think that this is where the things are happening, but this is where it manifests. So I take this next to this level. What can we use to have more real lived adults, comprehensive and aware people in our society that are actually able to make cogent decisions, and that it's at least, they're aware enough of what they're dealing with, not only as the monetary system, not only with dreaming on a spiritual adult level, but also just with, like, you know, what they're facing with these grids of energy and microgrids and all these 5G things coming in. The whole sheboygle, but really, the maximum freedom. Agnieszka, maybe you could start us off with a little bit of what we can start to talk about in this realm.
I think that people have given up their free will for, like, this general babysitter. And we've been doing that since we were children. We've been watching TV. We've been reading the newspapers. We've been allowing them to program our minds every single hour of every single day. And so standing up. And so, but the problem with how you speak to yourself, because, okay, so all of this programming is creating that internal dialogue, and it's creating how we talk to ourselves inside our head. And you said it's important to be nice to yourself when you're falling asleep. But I'll disagree. It's important to be nice to yourself all the time. And there are a couple of reasons.
Well, you're not disagreeing. That's not disagreeing. That's called expanding.
Adding on, yeah.
Well, I like to be contentious.
You do.
When you're speaking to yourself and when you're using judgmental or mean, or, you know, people think that it stays in their head, right? People think that it's all like, oh, I'm just thinking that, nobody can hear it. Well, you know what happens? The minute you're pressed, the minute there's stress or pressure or external something happens, all that stuff you've been saying to yourself comes out your mouth. And you might not even think it, you might not even mean it, but then next thing you know, your significant other is sitting in the corner crying and you don't know what you did because all this mean stuff that you always talk to yourself came out of your mouth and onto another person.
It's okay, Eric. You are awesome. We love you. You're amazing. Very sexy man. Very strong man. He's very smart, actually. He's funny, too. He's devilish wit. Enough of that, though. Anyways, Eric, if you ever feel blue, just play that back. Whatever. Whatever.
Kurt and I actually have named.
I can hear you. Sorry, Sam.
Oh, no, you're good.
Kurt and you what?
Kurt and I listen to this podcast. Well, actually, Kurt listens to it. It's called Biting the Bullet. And they are a bunch of veterans who they describe that scenario as coming home, taking off their rucksack, and asking their spouse to hold that for a minute just to see how that feels.
That's interesting.
When all the stress comes out of your mouth?
Yeah, when you just like you hand all your burden to someone else so that they can feel what you're going through right now, so that you don't, it's kind of like the misery loves company. You kind of, if you can't commiserate, you can create that. Yeah. And you don't even intend to do it. You just, you're trying so hard to feel something other than what you're feeling right now.
It's a very interesting scenario because like it's not for everyone in this world to have a soldier's life. That is a particular subset of whoever gets manifested in this world. It's not everyone. Frankly, though, it doesn't matter. I don't have a super complicated opinion on this. I support people who are valorous and true and noble, and it really comes down to character ethic and not like what you're, anyways. So,
yeah.
So, that's important because I think that like people get to one way or the other. Like there's definitely corruption in arms sales and military, and I definitely don't want war. But I also do admire the soldier, the knight, and the man or woman who defends their country. So it's not black or white. It's something that is praxis-based and realizes that Mars is real and that if we're making upward spiral decisions in our society, we'll be less likely to have wars because people ain't going to be putting up with that shit.
Wow. And, you know, to bring this back around to the dreams, I had read this study in a psychology class. I had a psychology teacher who he trained underneath Einstein, which was absolutely insane to me. I thought that was super cool. But he was talking about how, sorry, I lost my train of thought for a minute.
Your friend and who's under Einstein there.
Oh, he was talking about Ambien and PTSD sufferers and how it doesn't work. It actually causes a lot more problems because what Ambien does is it doesn't allow you to actually sleep. It's a muscle relaxer for the brain. So it literally knocks you out and doesn't allow you to function. I personally believe that if you have gone through a traumatic event, your dreams may be the only safe place for you to reenact, to revisit that event. And that's why you have those flashbacks. That's why, because you can't, if you can't sleep and you can't process it, you never learn what you need to learn, and you keep hitting this brick wall over and over again. It causes a lot of problems, and you see it a lot with military because of the extreme situations that they've had to go through sometimes.
My family, I'm a descendant of the Harrington House in Lexington. I come from soldiers who have fought and died in the American Revolution, and I have an uncle who has seen time, and I believe it was the Second Gulf. So I have family who I have spoken with about this. And, you know, I have other people who aren't family that have spoken with us about this. And I've just had people in, you know, who have, it's just like, it's also as independent as the person who goes to war, who goes in the army. It's also like down to that as well. Cause some people can go in there and they're here to take it. They're like, all right, I killed, but I was doing it. And it was like, just and legal, and it was, you know, him against me, and look, hey man, you know, I'm okay. They live their life, and it's something that they did, but they're able to integrate that because it's part of whatever their character is. And, you know, Obviously societies for better or worse have that, if not need that. I don't make the rules. I'm just trying to figure it out just like everyone else. But, you know, I'm always open to evolving all the conversation. Hashtag backwards hashtag. And the point is that I think that people have traumas from other sectors just as much, like police officers deal with a lot of things too, just as much as people who have very low income in this world. There's all levels of trauma. Very wealthy people have very fucked up upbringings. So, I mean, go ahead.
I was just thinking about the simple fact that the symptoms exhibited for a PTSD sufferer from like a war, an active combat zone, is the same. They experience the same symptoms and the same experiences as a sexual assault survivor. So
that's intense. If that's accurate, that's extremely intense. Sam, I'm sorry. If you don't mind, I'd like to bring it back around to the dreaming for a second, because getting into that realm where we can actually see the importance again is that this, if you're trying to attack the problem after it's already happened, that doesn't make sense. You don't try to rebuild the burnt down house. Trauma happens in the imminence that is coming into the life. Like it's like when you're driving, I'm trying to explain this to the listener here, who especially might not be that interested in the reality manifestation, but it's like when you're driving through a video game, the road keeps building in front of you, right? It keeps like materializing in front of you. The best you can see is what's happening in front of you, but you know that there's a bunch of things going on that make that thing appear, right? There's stuff that happens before it pops up on your screen. It's the same thing with reality, so-called loading, but it's not a computer program. It's something kind of dreamy, weamy, timey, wimey, wibbly, wobbly. And I have no idea how to really express reality. And if you do too, then do this show better than I do, anyways. So listen, here's the point. When we actually realize that the dream level is where the real work does begin, and that traumas can be healed, and all future is possible as long as you choose to give up the past. And that doesn't mean it's easy. It's heavy. The past is heavy for a reason. That duffel bag is an accurate description. But do you want to be, and let's flip the duffel bag metaphor and go back to Agnieszka, who's been very patiently waiting to kick ass on this topic. When that duffel bag is given, have you not heard in the Buddhist maxim or any kind of proper, I don't know why I like Shinto so much, but Shinto is popping up all throughout today, so it must be a thing for me. Buto, dance like a child. Dance of the child. So the point is that when you look at the realm of the dream or the healing process, which you need to go through, you're not going to be able to put the cart, have the cart after the horse. Anyways, I'm getting a little distracted now that I keep thinking about that Shinto thing's really bugging my head. To the listener, there's something really strongly pulling me in that direction, but it's the acid that you pour into the cup. It's like, you're trying to spit your acid at them. Good. I finally figured out what the hell I'm trying to say. If that person's handing you the duffel bag, they're giving you a cup full of poison, but the only thing, that the poison, what am I trying to say? How does
you
that
don't happen? Have to drink the cup of poison?
No, it's something about...
I'll lead you out of this woods. It's like
the point about the whole thing with the... No, fuck the woods. The point about the fuck the woods. Fuck the 100-acre fuckings. Pardon my... See, now I have to put the explicit on this, Agnieszka.
Just cut it out. Just bleep it out. Just go beep.
Adult, not punk rock rebel gnosis or whatever the fuck it is. Listen, kids.
Spice it up every now and then.
Trying to help reality.
Can we talk about how useful trauma can be?
We could talk about useful mushrooms are in healing trauma, but I just want to finish the point about that. If you give poison into their vessel, right? The vessel. Oh gosh, I can't believe I can't get this maxim out of my head. Anyways, you still got poison in your own vessel, and you're burning yourself, asshole. That's what I'm saying. So instead of giving someone else poison, transmute that duffel bag. You're a strong man or woman. You are not anyone else's property, and you are certainly not anyone else's slave. You are capable of doing the dream work that we're talking about. You're capable of looking yourself in the mirror, understanding what the shadow is, starting to have this comprehension with yourself, realizing that you don't have to dedicate your entire life to this philosophy idea. But if you want to do push-ups, you want to do a keto diet, why don't you have the same thing for your spirituality? You can work with any religion because it's at the core of all of these things. So please, Agnieszka, your turn.
So we were talking about trauma, right? And so there's two ways. One way, you can push against that memory, like put a lot of energy and a lot of, mental energy against pushing against, I don't want to hear, see, or whatever. And in that way, that trauma can come out the side and blast into other people around you and may not be so good. But another way, and it's what Sam's been embracing as well lately, is to actually embrace that trauma. Okay, this shit happened to me and it sucked. But at the same time now, Sam is able to do this whole counseling thing based on the fact that she has a deep understanding of her specific clientele, right?
I'm extremely impressed, by the way. I want to say, like, I invited both of you on here because both of you are extremely impressive to me for your own individual reasons. But I want to affirm what you're saying by adding on to what you're saying.
And you can add on as many flatteries as you want.
Dear lady, I am a 00 degree Libra. You do not know what Pandora's box you are kicking at.
I am a Sagittarius. You cannot fill enough compliments in a box to give to me.
She's not even She's not. We just found a nexus. This is not good. And infinite ignition, drust effect, go! All right. Back to Agnieszka for the weather report.
We're both Sagittarians.
Oh my goodness, I'm in heaven.
It's very warm, right?
I'm not even kidding, guys. I just had the joke. I just realized I spoke truth. My midheaven in my chart is in Sagittarius.
That's cute.
That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
It's also my 10th house of public and fame and career. So Sagittarius, that guy. Yay! Uh-huh. Lots of Mars in there too. You wouldn't doubt that I have Mars in a fire sign.
Of course. I wouldn't doubt it.
Anyhoot. Yes, I think that we can talk about, because trauma is kind of like, you know, when you're boiling or cooking something, you know, I mean, trauma isn't exactly, it's bad safe. It's like bad trauma. Trauma is like when stress or like learning or experience got out of hand. I'm being kind of like general, but it's pretty true.
That's a pretty accurate explanation. I was going to tie, I was thinking about, you know, this inability to get into a dream state, to stay in a dream state, to understand the dream state. A lot of people, one, they don't understand how to exist in these states, how to absorb the information. And another issue is 80% of the population is sleep deprived without a sleep disorder. So one, we're not even getting people to sleep. You can't dream if you're not asleep.
And these
so I think alarm. We have and you know, like all these lights, I think it boils down to the hierarchy of needs. You need food, you need water, you need a safe place to stay, you need to know that you are worth something, and mine just went blank.
Oxygen. You also need oxygen, but the order
oxygen. Oh, and sleep. You need to, like, you can't, if you don't have a place that's safe to be, you're not going to sleep.
Do you know what I love to say to what you're saying, if you don't mind my interjecting, is that one of the things that I find that I bring to the table is my cute little way of just being stupidly innocent and just, you know, breaking down something ridiculously complex into the obvious thing. And I guess, like, it's like this. I think I found one with this one. It's like, you talk about, look at the language we use. We go back to sleep. You can't, you just did my work for me on this one, because you can't go 3 minutes without oxygen, or, you know, general, whatever it is, 3 days without water and then 3 weeks without food and shit. But then no one talks about the super obvious one, which is the one that you really can't go. I mean, like oxygen, I guess, but yeah.
72 hours. If you do not sleep in 72 hours, you are clinically insane.
Yes. And why? And the point is, what is it about reality, right? And what is it about sleep? And what is it about experience and consciousness? Yeah. No, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Our whole society is set up weird. I haven't worked in a real job since 2010. And being able to sleep and not sleep, wake up without an alarm. And not that I sleep a lot, but I don't have to stress about it. I don't have to stress about commuting. And it's made me infinitely healthier. You know, it's not about necessarily about money. It's about being able to actually live your life. You know, if you need to step outside, you step outside, you breathe the fresh air, you sit down on the grass, right? It's not like being locked up in this little box for hours and hours and hours, and when you get out, it's miles before the next tree.
I notice an instantaneous change. I'll go camping for a weekend, and I'll wake up at 6 a.m. without an alarm clock. I can't sleep past then. I've got energy all day. It's like I don't have narcolepsy. I almost cried one day when I came back from camping because I was like, I don't want to go back to this life. I don't want to be tired every single day and have to take an amphetamine to feel like myself. I want to stay out here where I don't have these problems.
That's a huge thing to mention is also not only we can tie this into what we were talking about, the magical geography. Some places just have energies to them, ley lines or spiritual things that have happened, battles, cults, whatever, UFO activity, other places, you know, Bridgewater Triangle, etc. Some other places, you know, have like what am I trying to say here? Astrological things that relate to your chart, like the way that your chart lays out, like you might have Mars that overlays
governed by different
area. And so magical geography has a lot to do also with this. And the lighting, the lack of stars, the lack of connection to the ground, the lack of proper water, you know, I'm sure that has to do with our ability to, you know, process acetylcholine, which is necessary for the physical aspect of the counterpart of the dreaming aspect of the spiritual. So, I mean, like, there's all these different things that we need to really, and we're not going to get them tonight, but this is the conversation that we build forward having, like, these things. You know what I mean? Like, I smoke cannabis. I enjoy that very much. I appeared in front of the Massachusetts State Senate in 2009 to argue on behalf of its legalization as part of a panel with Normal and Mascan. It was fortunately 3 years later that it became medically legal, and I was just in the canny today, and I see that there's now cops outside there because now that there's recreation, all this other stuff. Now they got two different windows and this, that, the other thing. Anyways, so enough about that.
My point
about bringing up the cannabis is that it actually makes it harder to dream sometimes. So there
is a dream suppressant, yes.
And there are certain, so that's another thing that I want to make clear, like, make sure that you take your psychic health seriously because, you know, there's a cost for certain, you know, different medicines.
So what I have to say about that, though, is because I am very different from most people. I always, 90% of the time, I remember my dreams. I am aware that I am dreaming. I lucid dream, and I only lucid dream. You will use cannabis as a dream suppressant when it gets too exhausting because your body, your consciousness is not supposed to be awake during that time. It's not able to handle things like your subconscious is. Everything, all the symbols and the information is absorbed, not directly. It's more, you're just more absorbing it through an experience versus communication. So
I love the way you said that.
But I find it very.
I love that. Okay.
I find it very useful for people who have lucid dreams all the time to use a dream suppressant because you don't have to be conscious during your dreams for you to have dreams.
That's so well put. I really feel like that's the highlight of the show. Agnieszka, outdo her. No, I'm totally kidding, guys. You guys are actually both perfect the way you are. In fact, you've outdone me. Now that I've totally leaved.
That was the goal.
Now that I've a goal, you came here with plans. Oh, now you shall see. No, now it's over. Watch the black hole. No, I'm kidding.
I want to go back to something because we were talking about being autonomous, and then mentioned this dream about, you know, being more among the trees and among nature. So if that's your actual goal, let's unpack that and let's make that happen for you. There's absolutely no reason why you would have to live somewhere where you're not finding the atmosphere ideal for yourself.
In fact, I'm working on that right now. But I want to step back to my almost, what I'm trying to say is that, like, again, to say that you guys have outdone me is to say that that's my Libra. I'm very Venusian, and I cannot tolerate when people feel like they are being let down or left out when I care about them. And that's a thing I would like to say is, like, part of what I'm doing with my life right now is taking care of myself and figuring out that I can choose to live the life that I want to lead. And I'm an adult and that I actually make these choices. And that because of that, my life can be fucking phenomenal. So that being said, some of these choices are to make sure that I leave in my wake a trail of glittering happiness that other people are able to choose to pick up or leave at their own will. But all that I conscientiously create in this world is going to be to the utmost of my admittedly humble human control, something that will enrich people and leave a trail of ichor that is free will and love and upward spiral energy, if you feel me. So I guess I want to draw this kind of like a little bit more to the close. We're getting towards the goalpost for today.
Go ahead.
Actually, before I ask that question, what do you want to say?
I was going to congratulate, it's not the right word, commend you on that practice, because I really do believe it's extremely important. Kurt and I were watching this a movie about a kid who was getting picked on, and his friend, who was a girl, comes up and punches the guy in the face, and the kid's like, "You're not doing me any favors." And Kurt had said, "Well, you know, he's right, because, you know, standing up for someone else doesn't make them look any bigger." And I said, "No, but she was doing a different favor by saying, 'You're worth standing up for.'" And sometimes I think this is the role of the mother. This is why mothers have unconditional love. No matter what you do, it doesn't matter if you bring a dead body chopped up in pieces to your front doorstep. Your mom is still going to say, "That was wrong, but I love you."
There's, of course, the triple-fold nature to the female archetype, the Hecatean way of breaking it down, or the Babylonian way, or however, right? But that is definitely a part of the empress, the female nurturing archetype, right?
It doesn't change the love, yeah.
Yes, yes. It's Sophia who loves everything that's underneath her wisdom. It's the Demiurge who hates.
And I think that there's a lot of people out there who never had anyone stand up for them or tell them that they're worth standing up for. Therefore, they don't see it. They don't see any reason to move forward because no one ever did that. So making people feel good and happy is important.
Crime comes from that, right? They talk about, if that youth only had this or that. Well, and then it's like, what is crime? And, you know, what is high crime versus low crime, right? No measure of health to be well-adjusted to a sick society. And I think that it's ultimately like people who are causing that shit are psychopathic for a reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do believe that there is.
Youth are bombarded with all this negative information.
Well, again, I mean, that's like up to the it's up to the parent to like keep them from that stuff. But like when you don't have, you know, it gets all fucked up. And so the point is that like
themselves. So.
Well, here's something that's interesting. Like I brought this up with my mom this morning. I say to her, "You must have had some kind of programming going on that was averting your better judgment as a mother, because no well-adjusted person who's mothering will buy their 8-year-old son Mortal Kombat 2 when the son plays a video game and looks at the mom and says, 'This isn't violent.'" And I could say, guys, I'm saying this for a serious reason, because kind of serious, but it's kind of like intense for me. I remember seeing a look on her face. I did something. I flipped a trigger in her brain. I was the kid doing the thing that the Simpsons, I don't know, like between the Disney magazine, the Simpsons, all of that stuff that you're talking about, Agnieszka, I do acknowledge that is absolutely real, because I saw my mom's face shape change. I could feel her consciousness shift. I'm 8 years old. I noticed this. Man, I've been a fucking shaman my whole life, apparently. My mom bought me the game. And Mortal Kombat 2 is MK Ultra. Fucking MK right there. It really isn't good for kids. I'll tell you that. And that really gets into your dream subconscious and makes for violence. It's not good. So I got to say, like, ultimately, you're right. I'm not disagreeing with that. There's all that kind of like influence, but that's not exactly the only thing we're talking about here. But when you brought it up, I felt it was only appropriate to acknowledge it with a very powerful personal anecdote.
I'd like to add on to that. In that moment where you see their face change, because I've had similar experiences when I asked my mom if I was awake or if I was asleep at that current time, and I watched her face just completely change, where she was like, "This is the kind of crazy stuff that kids say on TV when, like, there's ghosts in the house or something bad is happening." And it made that part of me want to go away. Like, you're not supposed to be here. You scare people. You upset your mom. You can't have that. You need to go hide. And then you never get to understand that part. You don't understand why you're interested in the violence. Because don't get me wrong, Mortal Kombat is an addicting game. I am not a fan of, like, a lot of video games, but I will play Mortal Kombat. I love it. There's something about it. And there's nothing wrong with that as an adult. But if you constantly tell someone, well, you shouldn't be interested in that, or that's not good, or even if you imply it at such a young age, they ignore it themselves too, and it becomes their shadow.
I think that's a brilliantly put. Look at the conversations we've had this evening. This is, I mean, gosh, people, if there is an episode that you want to donate to, it is this one. By the way that my game, my RPG, I'm serious about my... My value for value RPG is so exciting because even the episodes level up. So every
That's awesome.
I do these with intentionality so that they're art pieces, so that they don't just be out there as just like, oh, that was this episode, oh, that was this episode. These matter. Each one of these is a golden ratio proportion. All right, now I'm excited. So
I commend you for that detail because I don't have the patience to be that organized. I want to. I admire it, but I just never have been able to.
I have, you know what, we all grow up and start learning and acquire new skills, and this is a new one for me that's fun right now. My show and the way that I'm pioneering using an actual value for value model, like addition called the VFV RPG. I've turned the value for value model into a role-playing game, which is exciting because ultimately we're bringing it around. What we're talking about is actively choosing to be active co-conspirators in the writing of reality. All of us are capable, and that's why religion has famously tried to hide the power of the subconscious and the dream world and spirituality. And, you know, there's some natural, you know, ego behavior that happens that cycles people. You know, we have to have some compassion for the weaknesses of our forebears, while at the same time realizing that we cannot luxuriate ourselves in that lackadaisical excusing of our own highest potential. Fuck that. There's no time for that. There's literally no time for that if we're doing this right. But what do I know? I'm just, you know, I'm a musician, artist, writer, M-A-W.
That was very eloquently put, I think.
I think that Agnieszka might want to tell us a little bit about what she's offering for services. And then Sam, we can do the same with you. And then we can start to have some final words after that. But let's do kind of like some, like, where can we find you, Agnieszka? And we're doing this a little bit differently because we're going to have some more meat and potatoes after this. But where can we find you, Agnieszka? And what are you offering as services right now?
Well, actually, Sam and I are working together on a project right now that is gathering a group of holistic therapists or a variety of therapists, because one of us is an actual psychologist. And we are going to be offering our services and creating a podcast that will really support the international community in emotional intelligence, emotional resilience, the ability to deal with the world in a much greater scale. But that's not quite ready, and it's not there yet. We have a naming contest in Autonomy right now. If you want to join and provide some suggestions, it's in the class chat. And then, and we're going to be changing the world, taking over the world.
You guys have to use the name The Power of Love and just use that Huey Lewis song as your title. You don't need a contest. That's the power of love.
Right. I wanted to choose Esoteric Empire, but, you know.
I wanted to do Rebel Guild, but, you know.
Okay, well, actually, the Rebel Guild thing is radically close to Chris Knowles. I had Chris Knowles on my Six of Swords the other day for episode 12, and he used this really cool term that I saw, and I didn't notice it till today. He said Rebel Gnosis, and I'm like, my God, man.
Ooh, Rebel Gnosis.
I like that.
He's such a writer, though. I mean, it's obvious, but he's a man of letters, and I mean that in the highest way possible. I mean that with as much, I don't want to add any metal to it or earth, but I shall say it with as much earth, not earth. Let me get that out of the way. With no earth, but with as much water, air, and fire as possible. Now that I may leave the earth behind with as much of those possible. And now that everyone's thoroughly confused, Agnieszka, thank you. Sam? What do you have to say?
Well, mostly I've combined my consulting business. I do just general life coaching as well as specialized traumatic experience counseling. I also offer locally a couple of, I call them coping management classes. It's more of a, if you're dealing with something and you're trying to get through it until you can figure out why it's happening or mitigate it, just how to deal with it in a healthy manner. And just trying to expand that as much as possible. Recently, I went from a two-person business to a international company affiliation. So it's been pretty wonderful.
I can only say I have high hopes for both of your plans. And I know that you guys have the tools to execute them, not only accurately, but profoundly. So more power and all power to you.
Thank you.
Both, just to make sure that's both Agnieszka and Sam.
Much appreciated.
Agnieszka's being quiet. Of course, she's nodding. You can't see her.
Of course. Thank
you so much. I bet you could. I bet, but I must say that her smile was graciously radiating throughout the airwaves in the ether, so you could actually
feel it.
Her smiling through the podcast. And now that you have been thoroughly dreamlandedly happified, what?
One last question, Nathan Lee.
Oh yes.
A personal question. Everyone has their different names for the dreamland. I personally like Underland from Alice in Wonderland. Do you have a specific name for it?
I'll let Agnieszka go first on that one. That's a great question. I love that question.
Well, I think that dreamland and the spiritual realm are one and the same, and my word for it is upstairs.
Upstairs. I like that.
Oh, guys, I don't think I have anything that's, you think like a cult fan would like have like the Emporium of Eternium. So yeah, I guess I have one. See, I just get to make it up as I go along. I'm somehow connected somewhere.
Well, imagine going to Dreamland.
Yeah.
What's the first thing that comes to mind? Where are you going?
Well, yeah, I like what you said about the underground. Because that was originally you could call it Elfland. I like that. Dreamland. I do like Dreamland, the French Little Nemo. I have a Nemo thing going on, but also the idea with Elfland, Alice's Hour in Elfland. He called it Alice's Hour Underground and such, or Adventures Underground. You could even call it the Netherworld. You could call it the Mirror World. I don't know. Looking Glass Land. I would like to make a claim that there's a difference between the afterlife and the dream world. And that's probably the difference between Wonderland and Looking Glass World.
Ooh, that is a great... I'm going to have to think about that.
Yeah, right? I fucking made that.
I'm going to sleep on that.
Yeah, no pun intended. That's fucking fantastic. Who dreamed it?
I had a session with a guy once who talked about when you fall asleep, you go to visit your soul family in your original home. And
I
imagine that being this living room with couches and people talking and hugging each other.
I think that's lovely.
That's beautiful.
That's what upstairs is. It's like a nice, comfortable couches and, yummy drinks and just your family hanging out, giving you hugs, checking in on your progress on Earth.
I am going to build that into my dream empire. That's fantastic.
Nice.
And I got to say, like, ultimately, if I was going to respond to your question, it would be something more along the, honestly, the ethereal heart of Gaia, I think is what I'd call the dream world, the ethereal heart of Gaia.
I like how specific that is.
Yes, because you get it.
I do.
I'm going to say that for the sake of, time and everything like that we can start to call it a show right here. I think we've said a lot of important things tonight. I really feel like we've hit all the major notes that I wanted to hit. Do you guys have anything that you feel like burning questions? Like, do you have any like last stuff you feel compelled or like inspired to share? Free, the floor is free.
I've really enjoyed my time here. Thank you very much for inviting
me. Yeah. That's about the same. I had just a great time. There's tons of more questions that I could bring up, but they're going to open Pandora's box and we'll be here for another couple hours.
We are going to have a revisit. There's a few other autonomizers. One of these days I want to get a real meaty I, you know what, I'm going to jump into season 2. I've Richard has told me there's a couple of people in there that I would really appreciate, so I need to jump in there. I'm gonna get around to that. Like a vault, like the it's so I'll do my best. No excuses. All right,
it doesn't have to be a full commitment, just one evening. You know, Tuesdays, Brett Vinat is there every Tuesday. Just jump into the clubhouse and have a conversation.
I appreciate you saying it, because you can see me, like, you can see my Mercury and Virgo, like, going through all the things I'm gonna have to do, and I'm like, all right, I'm okay.
I definitely agree with what Richard says about, like, no excuses, but I think there's also a second layer of, okay, we've got excuses, we need to understand them, so maybe figure out why you don't want to go, so it might be something you can fix, or someone else can fix.
I think that's actually the best way to end on that. That's fantastic. It's a very rewarding experience, and it's autonomy in of itself is much like Six of Cups. It's only in its infancy.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to the 11th episode of the Six of Cups. Oh, well, let us hope that the fates of we are happier than Persephone and that of Eurydice. But we shall see. We shall see. May it be happier than that of Elizabeth and Jeff. Strawberry and the younger Buckley. Well, thoughts on thoughts and things and things, and all of the circles being squared and around and in and time periods, both seeming to be pocket universes that revolve back and, how you say, eternally return. But then you realize that the universes that are eternally return are only I like that. I can say it the other way, but I'm not going to. Pockets of the greater flowing Godhead. So I think that's worth expositing on upon this before we end the show. So thank you so much for listening. Yes, that is our show. So thank you for listening to the Six of Cups, episode 11.